So good evening. Welcome. We are coming to the close tonight of Sri Aurobindo's fifth chapter in this part of the book, The Cosmic Illusion, Mind, Dream, and Hallucination. He has been in the midst of a description of what is the nature of hallucination, and even if it is nonsensical to the mind's purview, it is drawn from pieces of experience of actualities and combined in ways which don't make sense and which are not true and are not veridical, but yet come from fundamental verities, from things that are there, actualities. So it's not like they're false. Mistaken, yes. Falsity is another matter. So we continue with this paragraph. This at once raises the question of the nature of mind, the parent of these illusions, and its relation to the original existence. Is mind the child and instrument of an original illusion? Or is it itself a primal miscreating force or consciousness? Or is the mental ignorance a misprision of the truths of existence, a deviation from an original truth consciousness which is the real world builder? And a misprision is a mistake, it's an oversight. And obviously the latter is his view. He doesn't find the mind to be the creator of an original illusion. He doesn't find it to be capable of that kind of empowerment. He says, our own mind, at any rate, is not an original and primary creative power of consciousness. It is, and all mind of the same character must be, derivative, an instrumental demiurge, an intermediary creator. Well, a demiurge is a maker of the peoples, therefore a maker of the world, something which shapes a pre-existing substance of some kind. So mind doesn't create it out of its own mint. It is borrowing a substance from something. So it is not a primary creative power. It is derivative. It is likely, then, that analogies from the errors of mind, which are the outcome of an intermediate ignorance, may not truly illustrate the nature or action of an original creative illusion, an all-inventing and all-constructing Maya. Our mind stands between a superconscience and an inconscience and receives from both these opposite powers. It stands between an occult subliminal existence and an outward cosmic phenomenon. It receives inspirations, intuitions, imaginations, impulsions to knowledge and action, figures of subjective realities or possibilities from the unknown inner source. It receives the figures of realized actualities and their suggestions of further possibility from the observed cosmic phenomenon. So he's describing a vertical chain of being that leads upwards into the superconscious, downwards towards the inconscience. He's describing a horizontal reality in which, from the outer surface of the cosmos, where we gather sensory data, back into, let us say, the subliminal reaches of being, we receive all kinds of suggestions, inspirations, etc., from all the range of this, vertically and horizontally, comes pouring in material for the mind to look at and examine and decide what is true and what is not true. What it receives are truths essential, possible, or actual. It starts from the realized actualities of the physical universe, and it brings out from them in its subjective action the unrealized possibilities which they contain or suggest, or to which it can arrive by proceeding from them as a starting point. So we're dealing first with the physical world. It selects some out of these possibilities for a subjective action and plays with imagined or inwardly constructed forms of them. It chooses others for objectivization and attempts to realize them. So here we find mind dealing with form and shaping force. This is mind in its many-dimensional commerce with the universe, above, around, and below. But, he continues, it receives inspirations also from above and within, from invisible sources, and not only from the impacts of the visible cosmic phenomenon. It sees truths other than those suggested by the actual physicality around it. And here, too, it plays subjectively with transmitted or constructed forms of these truths, or it selects for objectification, for objectivization, attempts to realize. Our mind is an observer and user of actualities, a diviner or recipient of truths not yet known or actualized, a dealer in possibilities that mediate between the truth and actuality. So all that he's just described means that the mind is going out and surveying what is already there. It has not minted any of it. It's not the creator of those things. It's simply experiencing, perceiving, arranging, knowing as best it can, directing if it can. Now, since our mind is analogous to the larger mind from which it is a derivation, it suggests that the cosmic mind also is not the real creator of things. So far, this is what he has implied. But, he writes, it has not the omniscience of an infinite consciousness, still writing about the mind. It is limited in knowledge and has to supplement its restricted knowledge by imagination and discovery. It does not, like the infinite consciousness, manifest the known. It has to discover the unknown. Signature of ignorance. It seizes the possibilities of the infinite, not as results or variations of forms of a latent truth, but as constructions or creations, figments of its own boundless imagination. It has not the omnipotence of an infinite conscious energy. It can only realize or actualize what the cosmic energy will accept from it, or what it has the strength to impose or introduce into the sum of things, because the secret divinity, superconscient or subliminal, which uses it, intends that that should be expressed in nature. So there's a strong distinction here between the mind and its capability to know and empower from what the consciousness force, chit shakti, is capable of doing. By implication, it is chit shakti in essence, in its essential conscious power, which is the creator of the universe, and mind has a much less role to play, simply as a shaper, following the dictates, whether it understands that's what it's doing or not, of this higher conscious will. To continue, its limitation of knowledge constitutes by incompleteness, but also by openness to error and ignorance. Limitation of knowledge is ignorance. We ignore, right? That's where ignorance comes from. So mind is restricted in knowledge and force. This gives us an idea of the mind's incapacities. In dealing with actualities, it may misobserve, misuse, miscreate. In dealing with possibilities, it may miscompose, miscombine, misapply, misplace. In its dealings with truths revealed to it, it may deform, misrepresent, disharmonize. So wherever the mind turns in its field of activities, whether it's dealing with contact with the outer world or with what it might do, having seen these actualities and see what possibilities it may carry further from them, or receiving something from above or from within, it always imposes upon it its incapacities. It is possible for it to always distort and ruin, stand in between, and fuzz out that which it looks at. It may also, he says, make constructions of its own, which have no correspondence with the things of actual existence, no potentiality of realization, no support from the truth behind them. But still, these constructions start from an illegitimate extension of actualities, catch at unpermitted possibilities, or turn truths to an application which is not applicable. So here he's returning to his previous argument as he describes the nature of the mind. Mind creates, he says, but it is not an original creator, not omniscient or omnipotent, not even an always efficient demiurge. Maya, the elusive power, on the contrary, must be an original creator, for it creates all things out of nothing, unless we suppose that it creates out of the substance of the reality. But then the things it creates must be in some way real. It has a perfect knowledge of what it wishes to create, a perfect power to create whatever it chooses, omniscient and omnipotent, though only over its own illusions, harmonizing them and linking them together with a magical sureness and sovereign energy, absolutely effective in imposing its own formations or figments passed off as truths, possibilities, actualities on the creature intelligence. So he's a bit tongue-in-cheek here, tapping the Mayavadin on the head and saying, well, what would this elusive power do if it's creating all things out of nothing? But could it really do that? If it's creating anything, it must be out of the substance of something that is genuine, something that is real, and then all things created by it must partake of that reality. This, too, is part of his previous argument. Our mind, he's talking about the mind's functional utility here. Our mind works best and with a firm confidence when it is given a substance to work on, or at least to use as a basis for its operations, or when it can handle a cosmic force of which it has acquired the knowledge. It is sure of its steps when it has to deal with actualities. This rule of dealing with objectivized or discovered actualities and proceeding from them for creation is the reason of the enormous success of physical science. But here, there is evidently no creation of illusions, no creation of non-existence in vacuo, and turning them into apparent actuality such as is attributed to the cosmic illusion. So mind does best when it's given a resource to work with, and mind hasn't the power to create an actual cosmic illusion. But proceeding from experienced, discovered, observed actualities and extending forward with them is how we establish a functioning science and have success in that field. But still, this doesn't explain why there could possibly be a cosmic illusion. Huh. For he says, for mind can only create out of substance what is possible to the substance. It can only do with the force of nature what is in accordance with her realizable energies. It can only invent or discover what is already contained in the truth and potentiality of nature. Remember, he's talking about mind here and not consciousness force, not chit shakti. And he's trying to weigh whether this universe could be a creation of mind or a creation of Maya. Even if it's a creation of Maya, it must be drawing upon some reality to create it. Mind hasn't the power. It works with the substance given to it. It operates as a demiurge. And going back to Greek philosophy for a moment, the demiurge, the creator of the peoples, the creator of the worlds, is not the true God in Gnostic thought, is not the true God or an omnipotent God in Plato's philosophy either. In Gnosticism, the demiurge does the bidding of a God beyond. The demiurge may be the creator of the world that we experience and inhabit, but that's not the real God. There's a God beyond in a higher world, and that's the true creation, and the world that we experience is a falsification of that. So you can see some comparisons between these cosmologies. Mind cannot be in either case, as a demiurge in Greek philosophy or as a demiurge in Vedanta, the effective creator of the world, even the physical world. It must come from a higher source. So let's read that sentence again. For mind can only create out of substance what is possible to the substance. It can only do with the force of nature what is in accordance with her realizable energies. It can only invent or discover what is already contained in the truth and potentiality of nature. On the other side, it receives inspirations for creation from within itself or from above. So again, the subliminal all the way to the superconscient. But these can only take form if they are truths or potentials, not by the mind's own right of invention. Okay, again, he's trying to make firm to us the conclusion that mind does not create this stuff out of mental matter, as it were. What it draws from is a reality above or from within. It is shaping, it is giving form understandable to the mind, but it is not the creator of these things. Now, we get to the other side of the argument. Maya, on the contrary, if it creates on the basis of the reality, yet erects a superstructure which has nothing to do with the reality. This is presuming Advaita's position in Mayavada. Yet erects a superstructure which has nothing to do with the reality, is not true or potential in it. If it creates out of the substance of the reality, it makes out of it things that are not possible to it or in accordance with it. For it creates forms, and the reality is supposed to be a formless, incapable of form. It creates determinations, and the reality is supposed to be absolutely indeterminable. So this distinguishes mind from Maya and underscores the fact that Maya cannot create this universe. But our mind has the faculty of imagination. It can create and take as true and real its own mental structures. Here, it might be thought, is something analogous to the action of Maya, because we can believe the shapes that we give things and regard them as real. Reification, in other words. Our mental imagination is an instrument of ignorance. It is the resort or device or refuge of a limited capacity of knowledge, a limited capacity of effective action. Mind supplements these deficiencies by its power of imagination. It uses it to extract from things obvious and visible the things that are not obvious and visible. It undertakes to create its own figures of the possible and the impossible. It erects illusory actuals or draws figures of a conjectured or constructed truth of things that are not true to outer experience. This is the mind's genius. So, and this compounds its origination in ignorance. So it's carrying us farther and farther from the truth. First it has ignored reality as it is, and now it's going farther away. That is at least the appearance of its operation. But in reality, it is the mind's way, or one of its ways, of summoning out of being its infinite possibilities, even of discovering or capturing the unknown possibilities of the infinite. So imagination draws upon this store of possibilities and presents. But because it cannot do this with knowledge, it makes experimental constructions of truth and possibility and a yet unrealized actuality. As its power of receiving inspirations of truth is limited, it imagines, hypothesizes, questions whether this or that may not be truths. As its force to summon real potentials is narrow and restricted, it erects possibilities which it hopes to actualize or wishes it could actualize. As its power to actualize is cramped and confined by the material world's oppositions, it figures subjective actualizations to satisfy its will of creation and delight of self-presentation. But it is to be noted that through the imagination, it does receive a figure of truth, does summon possibilities which are afterwards realized, does often by its imagination exercise an effective pressure on the world's actualities. So if we just run through a roster of its many incapacities and defects, here's the truth. It is drawing upon reality and can do something of great importance and significance. Imaginations that persist in the human mind, he writes, like the idea of travel in the air, end often by self-fulfillment. Individual thought formations can actualize themselves if there is sufficient strength in the formation or in the mind that forms it. Imaginations can create their own potentiality, especially if they are supported in the collective mind, and may, in the long run, draw on themselves the sanction of the cosmic will. This suggests, does it not, an interplay, a connection between what is here and what is above. If there is a cosmic will, and if there is a strong imagination, a call from below, as it were, there might be, answering as a grace from above, and yes, I'm borrowing from Sri Aurobindo, something which not simply enthuses, but substantiates and informs itself into the life of humanity. Because it is not simply the need of an individual, but represents the need of the collective. And such things can suddenly burst upon the scene And we'll have occasion to refer again and again to examples like the sudden appearance of calculus through two great minds, Isaac Newton and Leibniz, at the same moment, hundreds of miles apart, because the auspicious hour had come and it must be born. In fact, he says, all imaginations represent possibilities. Some are able one day to actualize in some form, perhaps a very different form of actuality. More are condemned to sterility because they do not enter into the figure or scheme of the present creation, do not come within the permitted potentiality of the individual, or do not accord with the collective or the generic principle, or are alien to the nature or destiny of the containing world existence. Yes, we must acknowledge that. And yet, there are moments. There are moments. Brahma Muhurta, the hour of God, when that thing that we imagine comes sailing in from above and materializes itself. It can be done. Thus, he writes, the mind's imaginations are not purely and radically illusory. They proceed on the basis of its experience of actualities, or at least set out from that, are variations upon actuality, or they figure the maybes or might-bes of the infinite. What could be if other truths had manifested, if existing potentials had been otherwise arranged, or other possibilities than those already admitted become potential? Moreover, through this faculty, forms and powers of other domains than that of the physical actuality communicate with our mental being. Even when the imaginations are extravagant or take the form of hallucinations or illusions, they proceed with actuals or possibles for their basis. The mind creates the figure of a mermaid, but the fantasy is composed of two actualities put together in a way that is outside the earth's normal potentiality. Angels, griffins, chimeras are constructed on the same principle. Sometimes the imagination is a memory of former actualities, as in the mythical figure of the dragon. Sometimes it is a figure or a happening that is real or could be real on other planes or in other conditions of existence. Even the illusions of the maniac are founded on an extravagant misfitting of actuals, as when the lunatic combines himself, kingship, and England, and sits in imagination on the throne of the Plantagenets and Tudors. Again, when we look into the origin of mental error, we find normally that it is a miscombination, misplacement, misuse, misunderstanding, or misapplication of elements of experience and knowledge. Imagination itself is in its nature a substitute for a truer consciousness's faculty of intuition of possibility. As the mind ascends towards the truth consciousness, this mental power becomes a truth imagination, which brings the color and light of the higher truth into the limited adequacy or inadequacy of the knowledge already achieved and formulated. And finally, in the transforming light above, it gives place wholly to higher truth powers, or itself turns into intuition and inspiration. The mind, in that uplifting, ceases to be a creator of delusions and an architect of error. Mind, then, is not a sovereign creator of things non-existent or erected in a void. It is an ignorance trying to know. Its very illusions start from a basis of some kind and are the results of a limited knowledge or a half-ignorance. Mind is an instrument of the cosmic ignorance, but it does not seem to be, or does not act, like a power or an instrument of a cosmic illusion. Errors it might make, but it does not create utter fictions. All that it presents is based upon fundamental actualities, which draw their own reality from an underlying reality. So this imagination, which is an important feature of mind, is intuition as transposed into the mind's operations. And mind, as it elevates itself, rejoins with those possibilities and potentialities of truth above, and is restored to the point from which it descended. So it completes a kind of circle. He says, it is a seeker and discoverer, or a creator or would-be creator of truths, possibilities, and actualities, and it would be rational to suppose that the original consciousness and power, chit-shakti, from which mind must be a derivation, is also a creator of truths, possibilities, and actualities, not limited like mind, but cosmic in its scope, not open to error, because free from all ignorance, a sovereign instrument, or a self-power of a supreme omniscience and omnipotence, an eternal wisdom and knowledge. This is that chit-shakti which is based upon the reality of being sat, and whose experience of itself, whether in single form or in innumerable form, always renders delight. It is Satchitananda. This, then, is the dual possibility that arises before us. There is, we may suppose, an original consciousness and power, creative of illusions and unrealities, with mind as its instrument or medium in the human and animal consciousness, so that the differentiated universe we see is unreal, a fiction of Maya, and only some indeterminable and undifferentiated absolute is real. This is the Mayavadin's position. The world is a lie, only Brahman, soul untouched, undifferentiated, a homogenized, featureless reality is real. Or there is, we may equally suppose, an original, a supreme, or cosmic truth consciousness, creative of a true universe, but with mind acting in that universe as an imperfect consciousness, ignorant, partly knowing, partly not knowing, a consciousness which is, by its ignorance or limitation of knowledge, capable of error, misrepresentation, mistaken or misdirected development from the known, of uncertain gropings towards the unknown, of partial creations and buildings, a constant half-position between truth and error, knowledge and nescience. Pretty good description of our experience of mind, wouldn't you say? But this ignorance, in fact, proceeds, however stumblingly, upon knowledge and towards knowledge. It is inherently capable of shedding the limitation, the mixture, and can turn by that liberation into the truth consciousness, into a power of the original knowledge. Our inquiry has so far led rather in the second direction. It points towards the conclusion that the nature of our consciousness is not of a character that would justify the hypothesis of a cosmic illusion as the solution of its problem. A problem exists, but it consists in the mixture of knowledge with ignorance in our cognition of self and things. And it is the origin of this imperfection that we have to discover. There is no need of bringing in an original power of illusion, always mysteriously existent in the eternal reality, or else intervening and imposing a world of non-existent forms on a consciousness or superconscious that is forever pure, eternal, and absolute. So there we are. We have not finished dealing with this power of illusion. We continue with it in our next chapter, next week. Welcome to the conclusion of Chapter 5. And now, Savitri. We may run out of possibilities at one point, but so far, I think with one possible exception, we've never had to repeat a passage in our reading of Savitri after the Life Divine. They've always been fresh from week to week, something illustrating the themes that Sri Aurobindo has traced out in his great philosophic essay. He has made with equal power in sublime poetry. So this comes from Book 2, The Book of the Traveler of the Worlds, in Canto 6. This is her secret and impossible task, to catch the boundless in a net of birth, to cast the spirit into physical form, to lend speech and thought to the ineffable. She is pushed to reveal the ever unmanifest. Yet by her skill the impossible has been done. She follows her sublime, irrational plan, invents devices of her magic art to find new bodies for the infinite and images of the unimaginable. She has lured the eternal into the arms of time. Even now, herself, she knows not what she has done. For all is wrought beneath a baffling mask, a semblance other than its hidden truth, the aspect wears of an illusion's trick, a feigned time-driven unreality, the unfinished creation of a changing soul in a body changing with the inhabitant. Insignificant her means, infinite her work. On a great field of shapeless consciousness, in little finite strokes of mind and sense, and endless truth she endlessly unfolds. A timeless mystery works out in time. The greatness she has dreamed, her acts have missed. Her labor is a passion and a pain, a rapture and pang, her glory and her curse. And yet she cannot choose, but labors on. Her mighty heart forbids her to desist. As long as the world lasts, her failure lives, astonishing and foiling reason's gaze, a folly and a beauty unspeakable, a superb madness of the will to live, a daring, a delirium of delight. This is her being's law, its sole resource. She sates, though satisfaction never comes, her hungry will to lavish everywhere her many-imaged fictions of the self and thousand fashions of one reality. A world she made, touched by truth's fleeing hem, a world cast into a dream of what it seeks, an icon of truth, a conscious mystery's shape. It lingered not like the earth mind hemmed in solid barriers of apparent fact. It dared to trust the dream mind and the soul. Jai Ma, Namaste.